Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Talk about songs that smell like things. Hello, welcome to episode 21 of the Weird Al versus Everybody season, Blackjack. I'm your co-host, Sarah D. Bunting, and I am here, as always, with Mark Blankenship. Hello, Mark.
Murr. That's a reference to the cow noise that I'm going to be talking about later.
Just imagine that Mark has cookies and marbles spraying out of his mouth.
Yeah.
And that's because...
Not a euphemism, folks.
And that's because we are talking about... Mark, take it away.
Today's matchup in our Weird Al versus Everybody season is Nirvana's classic grunge rock song, Smells Like Teen Spirit, and Weird Al's equally classic in some minds parody, Smells Like Nirvana.
Amazing. As we are recording this, it is just a few days after the 30th anniversary of Kurt Cobain's demise, which functionally like shut down the college campus on which I lived and from which I was preparing to graduate in about a month after that. And I cannot believe that it has been 30 years. It is crazy to me. Like, Cobain and Nirvana feel very close all the time, even though I don't spend that much time with their music anymore. And even though Smells Like Teen Spirit is not my favorite Nirvana track, sort of stepping through time to think about this song for the podcast was kind of trippy and fun. And you just realize like, oh, this is iconic, not just because of the shroud of tragedy around Cobain's, the end of his life and his death, but because it's fucking iconic. It's a great song. What has your relationship been like with this song, Mark?
Well, so when Nirvana was still making music and was at the peak of their popularity, I was in 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th grades, like right around in there. And I was someone who, of course, was aware of Nirvana. I bought the In Utero album on Columbia House more because I was supposed to than because I really cared.
Yeah.
And I was always someone who listened more to of this type of music. I listened more to Pearl Jam and Stone Temple Pilots, but also, you know, I was listening to Tori Amos and the Indigo Girls and Mariah Carey and Madonna. And I just was, Nirvana was never that important to me. They were just always a band I was aware of. And
right.
Of course, I was aware of everything that happened around his death, not least because it was all MTV talked about at this period when he died in 1994. Mm-hmm. So, but you know, okay, I was always just like fine with Nirvana. And I've always kind of raised a skeptical eyebrow at the increasingly large pile of articles that have been written about Kurt Cobain and Nirvana as the defining XYZ of a generation because... You know, if you live through something, nothing is actually the defining XYZ of a generation.
Right.
There's always somebody who's not really that, who's not paying that close attention, who's your exact age. But like you just said, I'm glad you put it this way, that I can now hear Smells Like Teen Spirit and appreciate and really enjoy the song because it is not just a totem of the cultural obsession over this rock band and this frontman. It is a fantastic rock song.
Yeah.
And it's the reason that this band became what they were is because the songs were good. And Smells Like Teen Spirit is just a masterpiece of a rock song. There's just no ifs, ands, or buts about that. The build is so good. The chorus is such a release. The rhythm of it is so driving and insistent. The guitar sounds great. Everything about it is just great. The music video is still so good. The music video to me feels as anarchic now as it did then.
And he, like, you look at Cobain and you're like, this is a fully mature artist who, from some angles, you're like, this baby who shaved once a week. Like, oh my gosh. Anyway, should we hear a clip?
Yes.
Let me
there's something about these lyrics and the sort of anomie and that like Gen X, whatever, like Daria alienated, the sun hasn't been out in 2 months attitude that is very easy to mock. But when you hear this sort of vanguard version of it, you're like, it still feels very, fresh is not really a word that you want to necessarily use about grunge, but it's like, it does still feel fresh and compelling. Like it gets your attention. There is innovative artistry to it still.
Yes, that is absolutely right. I also think it's worth noting that the mythos around this band, as at least at the time, was like they could never possibly sell out. But I think that Nirvana was aware of the performance of themselves from the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just interesting to remember that Smells Like Teen Spirit was reached number 6 on the Hot 100. Like, this was a legitimate pop hit that made it onto pop radio. Mm-hmm. The album famously went to number 1. Knocking Michael Jackson's Dangerous off the top of the charts for a week before Dangerous then went back to number 1 the next week. But like, this band was that sweet spot of somehow feeling like the sound of the underground while also being the overground at the mm-hmm. same time.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the reasons that it was it matters so much, this song, because lots of things happen in niches, but this song happened in the glare of the public eye. Everyone was aware of it who was aware of these types of things. It was truly popular, and I think that that is pretty cool. And of course, obviously, as you and I have talked about for nigh on 8 years now, all of the bands from this general point in rock history wrestled with what it meant to become popular. Mm-hmm. Most of them to tragic ends. But to me, I get an extra charge from this song when I think, damn, a song this raw was a huge hit.
Yeah.
And I just think that that's, it's an example of sometimes the culture is ready for something new.
Yeah. And also that the execution is quite polished. Like, it's quite professional. It's not...
Yes.
Like, it still has edge, and there's still like feedback whine and a lot of screaming, and it's not like there's a lot of tracks besides this on the album that I just like in the privacy of my dorm room would skip over because they're unpleasant. That's the point of them, but I'm trying to take notes on Des Saussures and I don't need you like screeching in my ear. But there's... I wish I could remember where I read this, but there was some like, it was like the introduction to a book of essays about like some genre of film that it's like, whatever, noir in the 30s. And that the author in the intro was talking about the impact trajectory of crashes as it applies to like certain hinge points in pop culture. In film, in music. And I found myself thinking of that. I could not find the citation. I Googled everywhere and every possible phrase I could think of. Listeners, if you know what I'm talking about, get it in my eye holes so I can give credit. But I found myself thinking about the impact trajectories of Nirvana and MTV and pop radio and the way that we consumed music as the internet was being born, and how there was this like fucking multi-car pileup that in a lot of ways created a lot of wonderful things, but also ground up a lot of people in the gears, and you know, that like there's jet fuel everywhere, like, you know. So this song is so important, but at the same time, like when we were talking in the last episode about like the significance of Don McLean's American Pie, that almost like that sort of puts the song itself in some shadow when you're talking about it in this context. Whereas Smells Like Teen Spirit, like the song is still legit good and you understand why it created this, why the impact trajectories were so far ranging and why it, you know, matters as much as it does to our generation of pop culture thinkers, which I guess is what we are.
Well, I completely agree. Another thing that's interesting to me about this song is that it is the reason that Nirvana matters to the current young generation as well. Because I don't know if you've noticed, but you are going to every single day right now see a teenager in a Nirvana shirt.
I mean, in a like cut off belly shirt version too, which I kind of choose to believe that Cobain would be like, cut it up.
But it's just so interesting to me that this, of all of the things from this period that have survived, it's Nirvana.
Yeah.
And it's partly, of course, because of the mythos that has emerged around Kurt Cobain and his suicide. And he will only ever be 27 in the cultural imagination. He never got old. He never made a bad album. He just, you know, there's that. But there's also this song. And I don't think that Nirvana is on the t-shirt of a teenager in 2024 if this song had not been the hit that it was.
Yep.
But this song is sturdy enough to hold 30 years of people's fandom and adulation.
Yeah.
It's the rare song that can actually maintain or withstand the scrutiny that has been under, the adulation it has received.
And I think that Cobain was, I mean, whatever his other struggles with substance misuse and mental illness, I think that he also was the repository for a lot of like capitalism resistant rhetoric that like he also sort of struggled with where he was in that ecosystem. But
yeah,
the man and like the whole band, honestly, like understood how to bold type iconography, like the cover of that album, for instance. Like, I mean, actual babies, the age of the baby on the cover, understand that that's an amazing album and they know what it's from. And that
that's
Al
exactly
was able
right
to parody it, and that Kurt Cobain sort of felt that once it had been parodied, he was like, nope, he nailed it. This means we've arrived as a band. Like that he understood what it meant. Like this is somebody who understood the symbology of rock music and pop culture in a way that I frequently think that we are the poorer for not seeing what he thinks of what we're up to right now. Just my opinion.
It's a great segue into the Weird Al parody, because it's also, I think, part of the whole Nirvana story that famously, at least to me, Weird Al was trying to track Nirvana down to get their permission to do the Smells Like Teen Spirit parody. He had made the film UHF with then SNL cast member Victoria Jackson. When he found out that Nirvana was going to be the musical guest on SNL, he got Victoria Jackson to get him on the phone, and then she handed the phone to Kurt Cobain, and Weird Al said, "Can I parody this song?" And Kurt Cobain's first question, apparently, was, "Is it going to be a parody about food?" And Weird Al said, "No, it's going to be a parody about how nobody can understand your lyrics." And apparently then Kurt Cobain, like you just said, said, "Great," and realized, in fact, that he had made it because Weird Al was parodying him. And, you know, I think as we've realized or talked about many times in this season, the cultural good guys are the ones who realize it's good when Weird Al makes fun of them.
Yeah.
And it just underlines Kurt Cobain as a pretty decent guy, in as much as any of us ever knew him, which was not at all. And I would say that for me, I at that age was more into the song Smells Like Teen Spirit because of Smells Like Nirvana. There was something about it that like gave me more access to it at that age. And it's also worth noting that Weird Al's career had gone into something of a deep freeze
after
the failure of the movie UHF.
Much as I love it, he put him on the put him off the boil for years. So,
and he was initially teasing the idea of doing a black or white parody, Michael Jackson's Black or White, another Michael Jackson parody also about food. And he had the right idea that no, he needed to do something else, partly because Michael Jackson didn't want him to do Black or White. But he came roaring back with Smells Like Nirvana, And it returned him to the Billboard charts. This song, I bought the cassette single for Smells Like Nirvana, I'm happy to say. And Sarah, for me, I think this is one of Weird Al's true masterpieces.
I don't know if it's I don't know if it's a masterpiece, but I think it is. I think it is a masterpiece, but I think it also is like pretty straightforward in terms of like he understands that the bones of the song are good. He understands where the parody story is, and he just does it and gets out, which is smart.
And what I love about it, though, what for me elevates it is he knows exactly how to parody the wild energy of this song by inserting a wild energy of his own. He manages to tap into the same sense of rebellious chaos, but make it funny.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's why I referenced a cow noise at the very beginning of this episode, because he adds a cow noise. He adds a sheep noise. There's a, well, and let's listen to a clip, because I pulled this section specifically to help me make this point. Okay, so a couple of things. The line "Sing distinctly, we don't wanna buy our album, we're Nirvana." It's so savage. It's like, you know what? We've constructed an identity and we want you to pay for it. I just feel like it's goofy and kind of ludicrous, but it's also, if you look at it right, a savage takedown of the entire scene of this music trying to pretend like it wasn't commercial, when instead Weird Al is able, in the course of one couplet, to remind us that that is, in fact, just as much a performance as Madonna, whom he references before.
Right.
And I just think that that shit is brilliant, Sarah. It really brings me a lot of joy.
Well, and he's also... he's also taking the piss out of posers who are like, you know, this is really serious and it's the voice of a generation. And he's like,
yes,
he has that couplet about this ought to bug your parents. And then there's Dick yes. Van Patten, the ultimate 70s TV parent in the audience. Yes. And then there's a belching noise. And it's like he's reminding us, like, before you apply to graduate school with your thesis on Smells Like Teen Spirit, let's deflate the balloon of self-importance just a skosh by, you know, just a reminder, like, rock and roll has always been, at least in part, about annoying the previous generation.
Yes.
Which you too will be doing when, like, and so that's what he's doing with the parody, which is right on the line of, like, especially since, you know, it came out when Cobain was alive, like Cobain knew about right. it. So the fact that it still plays in terms of like not being too disrespectful, but sort of understanding like Nirvana is, were the poster children for a certain performatively miserable, self-serious,
yes,
it could be deep. It could just be illegible lyricism that, because he's lampooning that and not the people, and it's not mean, that you could still listen to this after Cobain's death and not feel like, oh, that's not going to work anymore. Like, it still works.
Yeah, that's right. Because he's not making fun of Kurt Cobain. He's making fun of the industry, both cultural and spiritual, around this band.
Mm-hmm.
And you're so well said too, like, hey, just remember, primarily here were to piss off your mom and dad.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I love too about this music video, which is in some ways a shot for shot recreation of the original, mm-hmm. including the same actor playing the janitor.
Yeah.
in the when the crowd goes wild and starts fighting, they rip off a guy's head. Another guy gets his arm ripped off and gets beaten with it. Mm-hmm. And it's just taking it to such a ludicrous degree that if you cannot see how, you know, if you have a decent sense of humor about yourself, you can see like, yeah, this is the ultimate endpoint of my aggro tendencies. And that's pretty funny. And then he undercuts that by putting the guy who is the janitor in a tutu and having him dance around. And it's just like, just, it's so chaotic, but it's also so pointed. And I just am getting excited talking about it, as is probably clear. There's so much wit and intelligence and honestly joy and energy in what he's created here. And I love it.
Well, and I think he's also, like, there's one guy in the crowd who's, he has a shaved head and someone has sharpied this space for rent on it.
Yes,
so there's also a comment on how much of the conversation around Nirvana was about selling out versus not selling out. And then that Al has this big comeback, sort of under the wing of this song, and that he had been dying to sell out and hoping that someone would buy him out for years because UHS yes. had bombed. And so that there's that sort of meta Moebius of meaning as well. And I just like the fact that Kurt Cobain wasn't like Blink, fine, but actually was like, I mean, I don't think enthusiastic, because I'm not sure he was enthusiastic about anything necessarily. As a result of certain chemical choices that were being made, I suppose we must say. But I feel like he, of all people, this is the, like, let's put them in the studio with gas station snacks fanfic that I would really like to see, because I think there is a maker's pride that they share. And that if we sort of like looked in at the studio, like Weird Al and Miley is going to be like, you know, Pixie Sticks chaos. This is going to be Kurt and Al just like sitting quietly. And occasionally someone will be like, what about? And the other one's like, uh-huh. Like, I just feel like they would have worked very well together and had a similar understanding of craft.
Yes.
And well, but we'll never know. So it's a shame.
And this conversation has actually been echoed by what happened in the comment section on the poll for this episode. And listeners, if you are not a Patreon patron of this show, you are missing the opportunity not only to comment on polls, to vote in polls, but also to hear all of the episodes in this season. We are making a full half of the season available to patrons only, but you can be a patron at any level and get to hear everything else that we're talking about. It's patreon.com/mastis. And Camille wrote, I didn't really like Nirvana until Weird Al made this parody, which was so fun. And Nirvana seemed so self-serious, but then I found out that Kurt Cobain loved it and felt honored by it, which made me appreciate the original a lot more. Feeling you there. And now yep. our listener Kat, whom I adore, writes, I continue to be baffled at all of the love for the Weird Al versions. I respect and love y'all a lot, but come on. And I get that too. But when I tell you that I voted for Weird Al in this matchup, it is not because I think that Smells Like Nirvana is better than Smells Like Teen Spirit. That is not true, actually. Because it doesn't diminish my respect for Smells Like Teen Spirit. It's just that for me, as I've said before, the criteria in this season is if the parody does something that I think is exciting, that gets it to the, that makes me enjoy it, even at close to the level that I enjoy the original, then I have to go with Weird Al, because he's already working from a deficit of copying something that we are very familiar with. And I think that Weird Al finds so much in here, and I'm so impressed by it. That is why Al gets my vote in this one.
Yeah, I wasn't sure what I was going to do, because in some ways it was like voting for one half of a conjoined twin, like artistically, that I was like, but I feel like they can't, I feel like they need each other. Like, I feel like now even the original needs this in order to be considered in the fullness of its time. But then I thought, you know, there are certain Nirvana tracks that I could not live without and that would be resistant to this treatment. But because we do have this treatment, I think that, like, because you can't separate them and because that is a function of Weird Al and not necessarily of the original, this is an extremely torturous rationalization. Here's the point. I voted for Weird Al also.
Oh, shit. I thought I was going to be throwing my vote away. But, well, thanks to us, Weird Al takes it, even though the patrons voted for Nirvana. However, it was not a runaway vote. It was less than 10 votes separating the two songs.
And, you know, I get it. I get what Kat is saying. But I think that, you know, at least for me, I'm just trying to think about, like, it's not just the song. It's what the song and the parody, like, tell us about pop music, tell us about pop culture commentary. And I don't want to get too, I don't want to, you know, Ouroboros up my own butthole with some of this stuff. Too late, says everybody who's ever listened to the podcast. But I think that sometimes my vote is driven not by, like, head to head, this is a better aural experience, but, like, what is this bringing to our understanding of talking about songs versus what the original is doing? And, you know, that's, God help us all, what we're still doing here after 8 odd years, just slightly shorter than American Pie.
Well, y'all, it was a real pleasure. And if you are a patron, you will be able to hear the next episode in which we will be talking about Happy by Pharrell Williams and Tacky by Weird Al. Again, patrons at any level will be able to hear that and all of the other patron-only episodes from this season. So please do join us at patreon.com/mastus.
And as you've heard, our Patreon patrons are very smart and insightful. We don't always agree, but like a family, we still love each other. And our Discord is also really fun and has a bunch of people despairing about their sports teams if you need that kind of therapy. So come on through. You should hear the rest of the season. We're having a lot of fun. I think you would have a lot of fun on the Discord. So we hope that we will see you over there.
That smells like good advice.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.